So how's your week been? I guess many of you back to work now, back to school. Okay, for some of us, that's not quite the case. But still, most of us are probably now pretty much back to our usual routines. Even church today is back to normal. I'm not sure whether normal applies to our second song, but it's getting more normal for us, isn't it? But I'm guessing for most of us that life is pretty much as it was before Easter. But stop and think a minute. We've just celebrated the most significant, the most life-changing event since creation. And within a week, we're pretty much back to normal. Is that right? Is that how it should be? Well, that's what I want to work through this morning. The old normal of before Easter and the new normal after Easter. And to help us think through this, I'm going to talk about the Apostle Peter, or Simon Peter, as he's often referred to. Now, I love Peter. I love his passion, his get up and go, his highs and his lows. He's someone I relate to quite a lot. And perhaps someone we can all relate to in some way or another. So as we think through our reading this morning, we'll find it also takes us back to some other accounts involving Peter. So, our passage this morning, what's going on here? After the incredible events in Jerusalem, the disciples are back in Galilee. Why? Well, that's where Jesus told them to go. At their Passover meal, he told them, but after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. And later, when the two Marys meet Jesus after he's risen, he said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me. So that's why they're here on the shores of Lake Galilee. But just imagine what their state of mind must have been. Jesus, their Lord, their Master, has been crucified. But then he rose from the dead. They knew because they'd seen him alive, and others had reported seeing him alive. So they might be back in Galilee, but things were different. They certainly weren't normal. You can imagine them, can't you, sitting on the beach, almost shell-shocked by what had happened, wondering, well, what on earth should we do next? And for Peter, imagine what it was like for him. He's back where he first met Jesus, where he was first called to follow him. For 3 years, his life has been turned upside down. He's followed a leader like no other. He's seen and done amazing things. He's been in an incredibly close relationship with the Son of God. He's seen him killed and he's seen him alive again. But most of all, Peter must have been carrying horrendous guilt because of how he'd let Jesus down. Denied him 3 times, doing exactly what Jesus had predicted. What on earth should Peter do now? Well, I think, understandably, he goes fishing. Now, not the sort of gone fishing that we do around here, you know, that nice leisurely, relaxing pastime. Peter's reverting back to what he knows. He's getting back to his old work. He was a fisher of fish before Jesus called him to be a fisher of men. So he's back in his home village, back in a boat, fishing in the Sea of Galilee. In the absence of knowing what else to do, he's getting back to his old, normal way of life. Something that feels comfortable and familiar. Something he's done all his life. Something he knows how to do. Except it's not going well, is it? They fish all night, but nothing, until Jesus appears. Now, at this stage, you may well be thinking, this is familiar, we've been here before. And yes, because this takes our minds straight back to when Jesus first called Peter, back in Luke chapter 5. Jesus is teaching on the shore of Galilee. There's a huge crowd pressing in on him, so he gets into a boat, Simon Peter's boat, and he carries on fishing, teaching. Well, and once he's finished, he tells Peter to cast the nets out. Peter says, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets. And guess what? Back then, again, they caught a huge number of fish. And back then, how did Peter react? Well, we're told, when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." But Jesus replied, "Don't be afraid. From now on you will fish for people." And the account finishes, they left everything and followed him. There are so many similarities, aren't there? Fishing is going badly. Jesus appears and instructs them. They follow his instructions and catch a huge number of fish. So it's no wonder our minds go back to this account in Luke. And I'm betting that Peter's mind went back to those first days as well. But look here at Peter's reaction. It's radically different. In their first encounter, Peter would have heard Jesus teaching from his boat. And as a result, he, Peter, understood that he was full of sin. Too unworthy to be anywhere near someone who was clearly a man of God, a great teacher. So he tried then to put distance between himself and Jesus. "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man," he said. And perhaps that's how some of us have felt in the past. Maybe feeling that generally or specifically there's such great sin that we just can't come before Jesus. So instead we keep him at arm's length. That's understandable when you only know Jesus as Peter knew him back then, as a great teacher, a great leader, someone who drew crowds, someone to respect from a distance. But now Peter knows Jesus intimately. He spent 3 years with him. He's formed such a close bond with him. And so, in the passage we heard this morning, his reaction is entirely the opposite. Peter is still full of sin. But now he's so keen to get to Jesus that he can't even wait for the boat to get there. Instead, the ever-impetuous Peter jumps into the water and races there himself. He leaves the other disciples to follow along with the boat and the fish. And as in so many other situations, Jesus is waiting, ready for them, ready with a meal for them. Let me clarify a couple of things here. I don't think this meal is in any way meant to be a reenactment of the Lord's Supper, nor do I think it's meant to be an echo of the feeding of the 5,000, although I could see how, you know, that might come across in that description. But it is another sign of Jesus' endless grace and provision, just like their morning's huge catch of fish. Now, as an aside, and pretty irrelevant to the rest of what I'm talking about, verse 11. Are you wondering about the 153 fish? Why? Why are we told this? What's the significance of the number 153? Well, let me tell you, it's almost worth Googling it to see the array of possibilities. I did. There are some wonderful theories, some based on divine mathematics, some based on the number of fish species that were known at the time. Their imagination's gone wild, I tell you. But in my view, it was a big catch. It was an unusually big catch. So they counted just to see how many there were. And because this is an eyewitness account, John, our gospel writer, was there. He remembered the number because it was a big number. That's my take on this. What I do take from it, though, is that, again, as in so many of Jesus' miracles, what we again see here is a foretaste of what is to come. Bounteous provision. Not just enough provision, but overwhelming, unimaginable, bounteous provision waiting for us. But back to Peter. After their meal together, Jesus turns to Peter, and here we have such an incredibly poignant interaction between them. In full view of all the other disciples, Jesus confronts Peter. And again, imagine what this must have been like for Peter. At the forefront of his mind would have been the memory of how badly he'd let Jesus down when he denied him 3 times. He must have been full of doubts concerning how he stood with Jesus now. Maybe he feared that Jesus would say something like, "Peter, why did you do it? Why did you deny me?" Or, "How could you, Peter? How could you do something so awful?" But this isn't Jesus' way. He's got too much compassion to twist that knife of guilt any further. Rather, his goal was to remove Peter's guilt, to cut out the shame and the ache from his heart. So he makes no reference to what Peter has done at all. But he does ask Peter a very searching question. In verse 15, "Do you love me more than these?" More than what? More than the fish? No, this is a subtle reference, I think, to Peter's boast in the upper room at the Last Supper, where he stated very boldly that even if all the other disciples fled, he would never leave Jesus. Jesus was really asking, "Are you still willing to make that claim?" And Peter wasn't. "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." In his reply, he declares his love for Jesus, but he doesn't compare himself with anyone else. This man who had previously been so boastful, so sure of himself, so confident of his own courage, now stands humbled before Jesus. Jesus asks him twice more, "Do you love me?" As painful as this was, it was absolutely necessary. He's getting rid of Peter's guilt and shame by dealing with it openly. Why did he ask Peter three times, "Do you love me?" Because Peter had denied him three times. Why did he do it publicly? Because Peter had denied him publicly. The other disciples needed to hear Peter openly declare his love for Jesus. Peter himself needed to openly declare his love for Jesus. Did it work? Did it produce the desired healing? Well, yes, Peter never denied Christ again. And just a few days later, as we can read in Acts, on the day of Pentecost, fully restored, Peter stood in the temple courts and preached an incredible gospel sermon to the very men who had crucified Jesus. 3,000 people were saved that day. The old Peter was gone forever. A new man was born when Jesus restored him. Do you know, this was one of the great aha moments I had a few years back. I'm sure that from time to time some of us have had doubts about what we believe. And at this time of year, it's not unusual to have doubts about the resurrection. Did it really happen? Did Jesus really rise from the dead? I know I've questioned that myself in the past. But my aha moment came when I realised just how radical a transformation Peter underwent. Peter, the impulsive, at times brash disciple, who got it wrong as often as he got it right. Peter, who tried to save himself by denying he knew or had anything to do with Jesus. But after he'd seen the resurrected Christ, we see a new Peter, a great orator, a great leader of the early church. And someone who died, and died horribly rather than denounce Christ. There's no other explanation for this radical change in Peter. Christ's death and resurrection was the turning point for him. The Peter after the resurrection, after his encounters with the risen Lord, was a radically transformed man. And this is the incredible transformation we too can all have. When we come before our risen Lord, when we stand before him humbly and ask him to take our sin and our guilt away, because of what happened at Easter, we can have a new normal, one where, just like Peter, we too can be restored before Jesus and before God. That's why I love this passage. It shows that all of us Peter types can be confident that though we fall again and again, by God's grace, we can keep on getting back up. What grace. What mercy. But I'm not done yet, because there's more to talk about here. Because the transformation, the questions, were not the end for Peter. The receiving of God's mercy wasn't what this was all about. Because when Peter confirms his love for Jesus three times, look at how Jesus responds to Peter each time. He doesn't say, "Yes, thank you, Peter. Oh, that's nice, Peter. Now you can feel much better about yourself, Peter." No. He says, "Feed my sheep. Feed my lambs. Take care of my sheep. Feed my sheep." He's saying, Peter, there's stuff to do now. He's saying, Peter, if you love me, do the mission I've called you to. And for Peter, this is a brand new mission. As I said earlier, when Jesus first called him to be a disciple, he said, from now on you will fish for people. And Peter's last 3 years have been spent in that mission, sharing the gospel, calling people to follow Jesus. But what's his commission now? To be a shepherd, to feed and tend Jesus' people. And the mark of Peter's love for Jesus is shown in his obedience to this calling. He became the shepherd of the early church, and for 35 years he lived out this new commission, feeding and tending Jesus' people, living out his obedient love for Jesus. In fact, in verse 18, Jesus spells out what the cost of this obedient love will be, where he contrasts Peter's youth, his life up to this point, with what is coming. Previously, Peter could do what he wanted, go where he willed. But when he is old, Jesus tells him, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. It's an explicit contrast between Peter's old life of self-will and his new life under the will of Jesus. He's just submitted in obedient love to Jesus, and now Jesus says such submission is going to include taking him to where he doesn't want to go. And as John goes on to say, a premonition or a foretelling of Peter's death. And he was put to death because of his love for Jesus. So having spelled out his will for Peter, Jesus finishes by calling Peter to follow him. This isn't the first time he's called Peter to follow him. But this time it's different. This time there's no room for Peter's denial, for his doubts. This time Peter is to follow Jesus all the way, in love, in ministering to others, in spreading the good news, in life, in death. This was Peter's new normal, to follow Jesus completely and wholeheartedly and sacrificially. So what about us? Here we are, the other side of Easter. Where are you? Are you where Peter started in this account, back fishing, back to your old life, back to normal? Well, can I urge you, follow Peter's example of life after Easter. Race towards Jesus. Stand before him humbly. Allow him to take your sin and your shame away, just as he did for Peter. Love him as openly as Peter loved him. But don't stop there, because just like for Peter, there's stuff for us to do as well. There's fishing and there's shepherding. Now, don't get me wrong, our calling is not the same as Peter's. We're not called to fish by roaming the countryside, teaching and healing people, as the disciples had done. But we do have a part to play in this fishing business, because we're also called to share the gospel whenever we can. And similarly, we're not all called to be shepherds, as Peter was. Some, Mark, Chris, Gary, are called to shepherd in many of the ways that Peter was, to lead and to pastor and to teach Jesus' people. The rest of us aren't called in that way, but that doesn't mean we don't have some responsibility for shepherding, because we are called to love and take care of one another, and we are called to encourage and support each other by discipling one another, reading our Bibles together, particularly helping new or younger Christians as they begin their journey. So there's definitely some shepherding stuff for us to do as well. Peter's new commission, his new normal after Easter, was something amazing and unique and challenging. And it's unlikely that any of us here this morning will be called to something quite like that. But we are called to show our obedient love to Jesus in the same way. And loving Jesus isn't passive. Because if we love Jesus, then feeling something isn't good enough. Thinking things in our hearts and our minds isn't enough. We need to live it. We need to follow Jesus all the way. So we know what Peter's new life, his new normal was after Easter. What's yours going to be? Let me pray for us. Father, thank you that because of what you did at Easter, each one of us can stand humbly before you and have our guilt and shame removed. Thank you that because of Easter, we too can encounter the risen Lord. Help us to be people who live transformed lives. Show us your will for each of us. Help us to respond with obedient love, and give us the strength and courage to continue your work of fishing and shepherding.